We got the band back together again. Great. It's been a while. Oh, no, I guess we did have for a while, you know, all four of us together last week.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just came in at the end and just disrupted everything.
Yeah, so. You just came in at the end and started spewing passwords. So nobody heard it.
Yeah. I'll claim fatigue or something.
The drummer showed up late, was playing last week's set.
Almost live from across the USA. This is Late Night QRF. Your hosts tonight are Joel, Barry, Barty, and Michael, the virtual Youper. Tonight, it's spring. Really? Flight 370, too much coverage, and kite borders in Copper Harbor. All that and more on Late Night QRM! And now, digitally gathering at the plush QRM studios in Southwest New Hampshire. Here's Joel, Barry, Barty, and Michael! Welcome, everybody, to Late Night QRM show number 133 from the southwest corner of New Hampshire. I am Barry J.
And from the southeast corner of New Hampshire, this is Joel.
And from central New York, this is Barty.
And quickly, before the pager goes off, this is Michael, the virtual Youper, in the harbor in the man cave.
Woohoo! All four, all at once. At
the
beginning
whole band's
of the
together.
Show.
Okay, Owen.
All right. Well, we always start off with, I don't know why we always talk about the weather. This is kind of weather related. We talked about the Frosties last week. Well, I got to tell you, I've lived in New Hampshire now for 17 years, going on 18. And this year is the worst Frosties I have ever seen. I mean, it was, I went to Keene today with, and Sammy went along with me in the back seat. And we
Sammy
went down,
drove.
Huh?
Sammy drove?
Sammy drove, yeah. I was playing Ingress, Sammy drove. but, Route 124, it already got the group, the comedy group, Frosties, that's a local group up here, they've already had a little contest, and they said 124 was the worst road in New Hampshire for Frosties this year, and I believe it. I mean, both Sammy and I were damn near nauseous by the time we got to Keene. And you couldn't go over 35 miles an hour. It's that bad. I mean, it's like, whoa, 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 whoa. And then there was this one major dip that, man, I thought the car was going to go airborne from it, you know? It's
wait, what was that sound again? Hold on, let me set up the recorder.
Yeah, do that again.
What? Whoa, 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 whoa.
Thank you. There's a bumper.
Yeah, this is probably going to be my new ringtone for on Joel's.
Oh, Barry's calling.
But I got to say, wow, I'm getting tired of the Frosties. I mean, you know, I got to Keene, and I said, ah, damn, I got to drive back. I almost wanted to say, I'm gonna stay in a hotel for the night to recuperate. it was, man, I'll tell you, they are wicked bad this year. And, I don't know. I'll be glad when spring is here. What am I saying? I'll be glad when spring's here. Spring happened. And,
not here.
Yeah, there's another storm.
We had a blizzard last night, and we got more snow this morning, and I'm going outside, looking around, going, spring? What's spring?
Wow.
we still got a pretty good snowpack on the ground today. And it was really kind of funny because my sweet bride decided that she's sick and tired of having to go out to the driveway through the garage door, and insisted that she was going to go to the driveway from the front door. And she made it, but it was a heck of a walk. It's a good thing that the snowpack is as hard as it is, but she only sunk in a couple of times. And both times, it was like all the way, almost up to her waist.
Oh, geez.
And it was like, I'm surprised she didn't get stuck. But she managed to get herself free.
Wow.
It was funny as hell watching her. Of course, I got it on video, but she tells me that she'll kill me if I show it to anybody.
Oh, post it on Facebook. Come on.
I posted at the beginning where she came out the front door and was standing on some of the snow that had come off the roof, the big pile, before I started shooting video. I posted that on there.
Oh, did you?
We did have a conversation about the snowfall in Copper Harbor on my personal Facebook page. Because we got into the discussion about how there's a family person that lives out in Maine, and we were talking back and forth about the snowfall between Tug Hill and their part of Maine, which is kind of north, right around the Presque Isle area. Mm-hmm. And I says, well, you know, someone who's got both of us beat is a friend of mine who lives up in Copper Harbor, Michigan. And I showed him I posted the picture of the park ranger with his son on his shoulders.
Oh, yeah.
So. But I did put in a plug for the show saying, hey, if you want to hear him talk more about life in Copper Harbor, tune into the Late Night QRM podcast. You can get it on iTunes.
That's right.
Very good. And of course, we're due for another, supposedly a pending snowstorm coming up the coast on Tuesday into Wednesday.
Play the bumper.
Oh. Hang on.
Okay.
I'm not ready. Here we go.
And this means what, Barry?
Bread, milk, and toilet paper. There you go.
Yeah, that was almost smooth.
Seamless was editing.
That's right. I've been doing a lot of that lately. So Michael, how's the weather up in Copper Harbor?
That's what I was just gonna ask.
Well, you know, I haven't been home much this month.
Oh, that's
but,
right.
But it's been snowing. I know that's a shock to everybody.
And no.
I'm really getting tired of this. Oh, but it's too cold to snow. bullshit.
It's never too cold to snow.
Oh, yeah, it does get too cold.
I mean, it has slowed down a little bit because of Lake Superior freezing over. And the average ice thickness between here and Saskatchewan, well, at least between here and Thunder Bay, is 16 inches.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking, in some places, it's 5 feet thick on the lake.
Oh,
yeah.
It's no longer just a skim. I mean, they've been going out there with icebreakers and stuff, but it is.
Yeah, I read an article about the Coast Guard and sending out one of their ice cutters, and they said especially those 5 foot thick ones, it's where the ridge goes up or something. There's a ridge line that occurs, and so they'll be slamming into it, pushing, you know, it just constantly pushes, and then, but sometimes when they hit those ridge lines, they got to back it up like a few thousand feet or so, and then they just go full bore again into it, and they just eventually are able to break it. But from what I was told, the cutters, that was interesting. I didn't know how it really worked, but basically it just pushes the cutter and it pushes the front of it up onto the ice, and then the weight of the ship breaks the ice. And that's what a cutter basically does.
So. Yeah, they get up on top of it and then use the ship to crush it.
Yeah. So, and I guess, I don't know, is it just a normal ship or do they have all sorts of extra metal on the front of the ship?
The metal's thicker, and the shape in the front of the ship is designed specifically for it.
Okay.
It also makes them a little less stable in normal waters. So for people I know that have been on the full-blown icebreakers, they apparently rock like hell in normal seas.
Yeah, because I'm assuming the front is probably a little flatter or something.
Yes, it's rounded and smooth. It's not meant for cutting through and, you know, keeping things stable.
Wow.
But, we're still hovering right around 300 inches. But the thing is, it's been so cold, none of it's gone away.
Yeah.
About a week ago, no, 2 weeks ago, because, again, I've been gone.
Yes?
Whose chair is that?
Everybody stopped and were listening. What was that? It sounded like a cat.
creek.
Was it a cat creek? I thought it was a cat.
That was a chair rocking back and forth.
Yeah, that was mine.
Oh.
I have a bad habit of rocking in this chair.
And then the rooms get silent, and you hear Tim Cook bite into his energy bar. referring to another show here. But anyhow, you know, so none of the snow's gone away, or some of it's compressed a little bit, but it got to the point about 2 weeks ago in Copper Harbor where we were barely a lane wide in most of the streets. It just couldn't push it back any further, even with the normal blowers and the blades. So they finally brought up the snow goes 2 weeks ago.
The snow goes?
Which are the snow goes. The snow goes are full-blown big front end loader with the Oshkosh. I think it's made by Oshkosh, but anyhow, they're huge snowblowers, three auger high snowblowers with their own power plant on them.
Wow.
I'll send a picture. Oh yeah, it's impressive. A snow go will fill a full size dump truck in 30 seconds or less.
Wow,
man,
that's a big bucket.
Man, but it'll show. I mean, that's just the blower will do that.
Oh, the blower, yeah.
And the auger attachment will come out, and there's teeth in the front of the impeller, and that's for just grinding into the banks that are full of ice.
Hmm.
And what else? Oh, that thing will shoot a stream like over four lanes of traffic into the woods. So where they can, they just shot into the woods, so they don't have to keep filling the trucks up.
What?
But it's a problem when you're going right down the main streets in town. You know, you shoot it over one house, it kind of lands on the other one.
through the living room window, the next.
Through the windows, yeah. Through the walls, probably.
No kidding.
So I have a question. When you have 300 inches of snow, what do people do with their mailboxes?
Sometimes you lose them. We've had to replace ours twice now.
I was going to say, your mailbox is just fine. It's inside the building at the post office. When you put the key in and open the door, your mail's waiting for it.
Yeah, we do not have mail delivery out here.
Okay.
We just have the post office. But when you do go up and down the US 41 and 26 where there are mailboxes, there is a sheer cut in the snow on the side of the road. And then there's a little hollowed out area where hopefully the mailbox still is. And then there's about another 6 feet of snow above the mailbox. you don't have the New England problem of the plow coming by and having the you know, the snow coming up and knocking your mailbox off, because it's already protected under 6 to 10 feet of snow.
Well, I was going to say, if you bring those Oshkosh machines in, though, well, you know, that thing could just chew them up and spit them out.
Yeah, they occasionally make them disappear, yes, without a trace.
Without a trace. Yeah. Wow.
We've had ours taken out twice now by plows. Both times it was like the mailbox is gone, and it's like we contacted the post office and got a post office box because we weren't going to be finding the mailbox again until spring. You know?
Yeah.
And you know, so.
Well, Joel knows about my mailbox. Yeah, crazy Bruce, the plow driver, likes to plow our road at about 50, 60 miles an hour and has a wake of snow. I mean, he doesn't hit the mailbox, but the wake of snow hits the mailbox and promptly snapped.
The rooster tail.
Yeah, snapped mine off. Probably because I have one of those big rural ones, and of course, the snow hits that and it just puts so much pressure on the thing. So, got smart this time, and Joel helped me set it up. Got one of those swinging arm ones, so my theory here is if he hits that, it's just going to swing off to the left, and hopefully, you know, it'll swing back. Well, it may not swing back, but at least it won't fall down because of the snow plowing.
Pointing down the street rather than perpendicular with it.
Yeah. But so we're giving that a try, because I'm getting tired of replacing mailboxes and posts.
Well, it's like I had said, guys, the next time Barry's mailbox gets taken out, if this one gets taken out, come springtime, we're getting a ditch witch or a post hole digger. We're digging a hole 5 feet deep. I'm filling it with a sonotube and 4 feet of concrete, and I'm going to drop a 4x4 steel, quarter-inch thick wall tube steel into that concrete, and I'm welding a new mailbox on. Good luck trying to take that apart.
We're gonna put a pointed shield on it. He always comes down. Obviously it's when he's coming down the road, not going up the road. So we'll create some kind of pointy shield on the one side.
A V brake.
A deflector.
Deflector. Yeah.
But I mean, realistically, if I make it out of 1/4-inch plate steel, there is no snow rooster tail that's taking that puppy out.
Yeah. But because it's not cheap. I mean, even just a standard mailbox and stuff that I went and replaced it with, that was like $81 by the time I was done buying all the stuff. And then trying to put it in frozen ground. That was fun.
Good
luck with that.
Oh, and Joel, remember we were concerned because as we were pounding the steak in, the stakeholder thing kind of twisted a little bit?
Yeah, the steel twisted and bent.
Yeah, and we were concerned about that a little bit. Don't worry about it. I've got the hinge thing, so you can put it any position you want.
That works out nicely.
So, I'm done with the snow, I think. I'm done with the cold, too.
Did last week, did I tell you about my latest ISP support story?
I don't know. Started.
I know I talked. Yeah, I know I talked about it on the podcast.
Well, you gave us our password, the passwords for it.
if I talked about it in the last show, I shouldn't repeat it. But yeah, it goes back to the snow. The whole internet was down last Thursday, and find out the problems up at the mountain lodge, which I haven't been up since the last storm in November when I was climbing that tower in the middle of the night. But I get up there because I realized there's a bad router, and the snow go had gone up there too, to a point. It had made a path through the 6 to 8 feet of snow back to where the maintenance buildings were, and just stops abruptly. So there's this wall. I'm basically driving down this canyon in my Jeep. The top of the roof of the Jeep really isn't above the snow anywhere. And I get to a point where I can see the buildings, and it's just level snow, just level. And the level snow ends just under the eaves of the roofs of all the maintenance buildings. And you know how they've got the equipment buildings at the bottom of the towers? Well, it was almost not visible. There's just this this lawn of snow, white snow, up to the roof of the maintenance building.
Oh, jeez.
And my heart sank as I realized that the door opened out.
Oh.
Wow. So I got to my son is asking me how to heat up a tamale. Anyhow,
hey, that's important stuff right there.
Heating up a tamale? Yes, it is.
So he wants a hot tamale?
Yeah. Oh my God, I knew he was going to go there.
I did bring a garden spade with me, and I got to dig down 6 feet and then out, so I had enough room for the door to swing. It was lovely.
Yeah. Okay, that's one word for it.
So, farming for doors. Yes, one of you take over while I reply to my son.
Okay.
Excuse me, while I reply to my son here.
Yeah, and then Michael's going
Joel made a comment earlier about it not being, there's no way that it's ever too cold to snow.
Uh-huh.
Well, when I lived in Fairbanks, Alaska, when I was stationed out of Eielson, it does get too cold to snow because it used to get that way up there. We would get snowfall in the early part of the winter, and around mid-December, the daytime highs would go down below freezing. And by January, the daytime highs were like minus 20 to minus 30. Nighttime lows were minus 30 or 40. And during that period, it never snowed because it really was too cold to snow. Any moisture in the air was immediately frozen, and it was just be like dust. You know, all the trees, everything was all looked like it was all sugar frosted. That's where all the moisture went. So there was no moisture to literally fall to the ground as snow.
Wow.
Okay. In fact, that's that whole thing where you could go out with a hot cup of coffee and throw it in the air, and coffee never hits the ground because it's too cold. But the coffee just freezes in the air.
Wow. Gotcha.
So it does get too cold to snow.
Thanks for clearing. I really wasn't sure. I was just throwing that comment out there, but now that I know, well, thanks.
I was just trying to kill time while Michael was helping his son get a hot tamale.
Well, it's important to have a good hot meal to stick to your ribs. And there's never really any bad time for Mexican food.
Yes, that's true. Well, my client this week, one of the things they do is they do gourmet food, and they sent me home with a huge refrigerated box of samples, and everything from tamales to really, really good soup to you name it. So it's nice. I had to rearrange the freezer when I got home last night, but I was not complaining.
Right, that's a good reason to have to rearrange the freezer.
Well, yeah. With your weather, you can just put the stuff outside.
Well, yeah, except there are animals outside,
and they do like Mexican food.
You have a coyote out there going, ay, yay, yay, yay.
Oh man. Okay. Well, guys, we have to jump on the Ingress bandwagon for a little bit, because I have to say that yesterday I was scoping out on the Ingress Intel map, and I said, oh, look at this, a bunch of portals went to neutral in Peterborough. That's on the way home. I think I'll pass by there. And I did, and got them all and hooked them up and made a couple fields, and so close to level 5. I'm a level 4, and I've been for a while. Just so close. And I said, I'm going to have to try to work on it this weekend, but it's probably going to be next week. Well, I woke up this morning and brought up the Intel map, and lo and behold, it was like a miracle happened. All of Jaffrey, all the portals, apparently the person that did them before did them all on the same day, but they all went neutral this morning. And I'm like, hoo-yah! So I had to go to the dump, and on the way back from the dump, I claimed all those portals, and in the middle of claiming those, it all of a sudden the sign came up on the game, bum, 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 you've achieved the level 5, and I'm like, And so I am officially at level 5 and well on my way toward level 6 now. And I've been doing so much work down in Milford. Normally when I go home, I go home 101 for people that are familiar with New Hampshire, and you take the Milford bypass because, you don't want to go through the middle of Milford, even though there's really only one light. Well, there's a couple lights, I guess, on one end.
Well, there's a lot of traffic down there.
Yeah, but there's a lot of traffic.
Trying to run around the circle is a pain.
Yeah. And a rotary.
Yes. But you know what I found? You know what I found? If you're an Ingress player, there are like 10 portals right around the rotary. So you can be driving through there and just going bing, bing, bing. It's a hacking paradise through there. So I haven't been taking the bypass on the way home. I've been going through Milford and just hacking the hell out of these on the way out. Well, and there's been a couple places I've stopped and attacked, and a couple open portals that I took over, and it got noticed by the guys down there, and I was notified through the game of a couple guys contacted me for the Nashua Milford. They have a hangout, and they said, you want to join our hangout? Because we could use it. This one of the guys is a level 8, and he's kind of organizing the whole thing. So, yes, I'm now in the Nashua Milford Resistance hangout. And
cool.
So...
And
I also play with I do Merrimack too quite a bit, so it's nice. And but I'm glad to be level 5, and that's my Ingress story now. On to level 6.
I've had a hard time with Ingress because there's so little out here that there hasn't been anything I could take over, So there hasn't even been any XM out this way. So until just recently, I did find out that Sandy Creek, about 15 miles away, has a portal, and down the village Redfield to the volunteer fire department, there's a portal there.
Yeah.
And so, and that's only been in the last couple months. Before that, there was like nothing.
Yeah. It takes a while, and they sound like the default portals, so nobody's playing out that way, because you can submit different. If you read about submitting portal. Portals, you can submit some so you can get more portals out there to go after. I submitted about 5 this week, so I'm waiting to hear on those.
Well, there's just no population out here. So, yeah. You know, let alone anybody that's, you know, dealing with tech at all.
But your best bet is to
relate.
Your best bet is to do it around work. I'm sure they've got more portals around work.
Yeah, but usually when I'm at work, I'm just dealing with work. I don't have time to go running around the parking lot to try to play with things.
Oh, I mean, on the way home, you know, that's what I do. It's like, oh, I'm going home. There's no rush. I'm not rushing to get into work. I'm just going home. So I take
How do you do it while you're driving? Because basically you have to pull over to play with the Nexus 7, right? Because that's what I'm using is a Nexus 7.
That's what I'm using, too. I sit it on my knee.
E3.
I sit it on my knee.
Yeah, oh, God. You're a lot braver than I am, Barry. Usually when I'm driving through even a small city, I don't pay any attention to anything else but traffic.
Well, the areas I drive through, there's not a whole hell of a lot of traffic. Or if there is traffic, I'm going so... Yeah, but you can't go more than 25 miles an hour through Milford, and you can see them...
Yeah, but you got to watch for people cutting ahead of you and stuff.
You can... It's pretty much two lanes there, but you can see the portals coming up. So what I do is I hit the portals as they're on the map, and then as you get in range, the hack button comes on. And actually, the voice comes on and says it's time to hack, and I'm just sitting there with my thumb over the hack button, waiting for here. Okay, hack, boom, and then I hit the hack button, and I just tap the next one in line, and boom, hit the hack button. Yeah, sometimes I pull over. It depends on where they are, but there's a bunch right by the street, and usually they're in places I'm either stuck at a light or I'm stuck waiting for the circle traffic. You know, you can see a whole line of traffic there. I can hit four portals while I'm waiting for the traffic to clear the circle. Yeah,
I've been through there quite a few times.
Yeah,
for me to hit four portals up here, I have to make a 70-mile round trip.
Jeez. And you're a level six. How did you get to level six?
When I get down to big cities.
Well, that's not how I did it, though. I did level six before I got the personal hotspot on my phone, so that was all Wi-Fi, which really cuts down your repertoire on portals.
Hmm.
This current week, there were more portals on the block I was staying at than the entire county here.
Were they resistance or enlightened?
Both.
Okay.
Both. There was definitely, as you saw from my post, I also found out how much damage a level 6 XMP buster does against the level 8 portal. Nothing. Not much.
Yeah. You really got to
get down. I saw that.
Yeah, down near the kids' school, there's portals. So once I get down into Calumet and Houghton and Hancock, there's places where I can, you know, set up. And having the one portal up here really begets, I get points off of that because I go down there and I take over portals down near the school. But very few people get up here, so I control the main head point up here.
Hmm.
Where I set up links, I set up links over. Yes, I control the vertical. I control the horizontal.
That was a cool show.
Welcome to that.
So
was that Twilight Zone? No, that was our Outer Limits. Yeah.
Is that the Outer Limits?
Yeah, that was Outer Limits.
Yeah. But it is a cool game, and I'm getting, you know, now that I've joined a group, and I guess there's also a hangout group, and they also have communities on Google. Some of them are by invitation only, and they go through some major steps to make sure you're resistance and you're serious about it, because apparently there's been a lot of enlightened people trying to sneak into the group.
Infiltrators.
Yes, to get intel. So I'm in the middle of trying to get connected into the New Hampshire group here. And but it's fun. It's one of those addictive games.
They all feel sorry for me up here. They keep inviting me to come down to the campus, and they're going to drop caches of inventory for me so I can go down and pick it up.
Yeah. I haven't done...
Like, why didn't you do this? You had a prime opportunity. I said, I've got one portal. I can only go visit it so often, you know?
I got to let it fade, and then I can hit it again for maximum...
For inventory, yeah.
Yeah, maximum points, AP points or whatever. Now, when people drop things, can anybody... If you happen to be going by after somebody drops stuff,
Yes, anybody can pick it up.
Anybody can pick it up. That's what I thought, because I've never dropped anything, and of course, I just got into this group, so I don't know whether they do any coordinated stuff. Usually, it's kind of like, I'm going to go hit this, and somebody else says, well, I can drive by there and help out like a couple hours later. So it's, I don't know, it'll be interesting. I guess I'll be in a learning mode here. I also found out that when you're deploying resonators, if you put the, you want to put the portal at your circumference line, because that spreads the resonators out further and it makes them harder to attack in one pulse when you're being attacked. You have to actually move around to get them all. So that was an interesting.
You lost me there. What did you do?
Well, if you put the portal, if you're deploying resonators, and you put the portal right in the middle, what you'll notice is the resonators are closer to the portal. But if you just put the portal in your circumference on your scan zone, then the resonators will be placed further out from the portal.
Huh. Okay, I thought that was because... I thought the resonators were further away from the portal if they were a higher number, power.
That's what this guy said, and I kind of noticed that happening today, because there were some portals, well, you just can't get it where the portal is right on the circumference.
Right.
and so I was, had it more closer to center. I noticed all the resonators were closer to the portal, and I always tried to just put it on the edge, and then you get a bigger... circumference for the resonators. Boring Joel to death right now. But anyway, we could probably have our own freaking podcast just on Ingress.
Yeah. This week in Ingress.
So anyway, okay. So yeah. So I was happy because I made it to level 5 and we got then we'll try to open this up. A little bit of world news. I don't know if you guys have been, how could you not be hearing about the story about Flight 370? It's like every freaking news organization, both local, nationwide, worldwide, are covering this Flight 370. And the only question I have is, yes, I'm sorry it happened. I feel sorry for the families, but we're going on, almost 3 weeks now on this story, and it's like the number one thing everybody's talking about, and I guess the question is, why? It's a tragic...
I think it's a plot by Putin to draw attention away from his land grab. Everybody's talking about this stupid airplane. I mean, this is like a replay of Lost. I mean, my God, these guys are going to show up on some unknown island somewhere that we can't get access to.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Putin has taken back all the ground that the former Soviet Union had control of.
Yeah, he is starting his march on... he's taking Crimea. Of course, they all voted. They all voted to go back to. Well, they're all mostly Russian anyway there, because that's where their warm water port is. Russia's, and it used to be part of Russia at one time, and then when Ukraine divided up, they took Crimea with them.
Actually, it was before that. It was before that happened. It was it Khrushchev that declared that Crimea was part of the Ukraine. He kind of gave it away before the Soviet Union even dissolved.
Hmm.
But it was kind of a thing where it was the mindset where the Ukraine was never ever going to leave the Soviet Union anyway. So what did it matter?
Yeah, back then, how did he know what was going to happen? But it is a very important warm water port for them. So I could see them taking Crimea. And the only thing I can say is, our country has no room to talk. So when it comes to that, how many countries have we invaded in the past 20 or 30 years? So, it's hard to really take us seriously. Well, we say, you can't do that.
As soon as the central Ukraine rose up and said, no, we want to get closer ties to Europe, you knew damn well that there was no way Russia was going to let loose of their only warm water port. Just not going to happen. Yeah.
So it was kind of a given that was going to happen. But what's next? We'll see what happens. If they go in and take the rest of the Ukraine, then then that's something else completely. Because I've talked to a couple people that live in the area. They don't live in there, but they live in a couple neighboring countries, and they say that Ukraine is really divided in half. You know, the half of them are pro-Russian, the other half are pro-Ukrainian. And, they said the smartest thing would be just divide the country in half and let it go like that. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. And then there's Estonia next. And we'll see. You know,
that's been the division has been pretty well covered in the news if you bothered to pay attention to the details and not stick to only the network news, you know, because the BBC has covered that rather well. And other news sources have touched upon that fact. But of course, our network news here in the U.S., you know, we tend to stick our heads in the sand and say, well, you know, what's the party line? That's what we'll give the people, you know, and that's it.
No, it's more like it's more like Russia takes over Crimea. What is it? Crimea. Russia takes over Crimea. How does that affect the rescue of Flight 370? Because that's all they're talking. I mean, you flip it on. Actually, I was listening to No Agenda this past week, the last No Agenda, and Adam Curry goes over and he flips on his TV and he flips through the three, you know, cable networks, and he goes, let's see what they're talking about. You know, and it's like, first one, CNN, Flight 370, Fox News, Flight 370, MSNBC, Flight 370. You know, they were all talking about it. And it's like, jeez.
Well, CNN has been the worst. They're like 24/7 talking about that. And they're kind of like have these little 15-20 minute news breaks where, oh, by the way, Russia took over Crimea and some other thing happened over here. And, back to the flight now. You know, it's like, wait a minute here.
Yeah.
There's not that much new information coming out about this airplane. It's like day after day of, we don't know. What? No, we don't know.
We're never going to find
this plane. How many times can you basically come back around and say, well, yeah, we don't know? So shut the hell up about it.
Do you think it was caused by a black hole? Somebody actually said that on CNN. Do you think it was gobbled up by a black hole? Oh, my God. Yeah. I don't know.
Yes.
Yes, it was
gobbled up. Sure. The hell
you see the Bermuda Triangle moved.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, wow. It's now the Indian Ocean Triangle.
It's
the Indian Ocean trapezoid.
Because of climate change.
There you go. Now you wrap everything up in one nice, neat package.
Exactly, because cows fart, and exhaust didn't have carbon credits factored in. The Bermuda Triangle turned into the Indian Ocean trapezoid, which shifted because the magnetic north moved, which threw the Earth's axis off its tilt, and it's all the Republicans' fault.
Bush's fault. California had an earthquake.
that's the story that'll be spun in the news. You watch.
Yeah, sure.
I think we ought to push it.
Yeah, there we go. You heard it here first.
Everybody,
we gotta start posting everywhere that late night QRM reports that they have solved the problem with the air flight. This is what happens.
Right.
Just lay all this out. You know what? We will end up creating a cult of people that believes that this is what this happened, and they want to find out who was in control.
Yep. Exactly. Conservatives cause plane to go down. Story at 11.
The Illuminati.
Well, conservatives, neocons. Neocons are different from a conservative.
I like to lump us all in the same group.
Not them. Or in case, if you're talking from a progressive point of view, not us.
progressive. Okay.
Yeah, it is.
So, anyway, okay. Well, enough with Flight 370. I'm sure we'll still be talking about it this time next. Well, we may not be, but the rest of the news agencies will be still talking about Flight 370.
Has anybody ever thought, just for a moment, just work with me on this one, the best thing in the world when you want to pull something off, and Barty kind of touched on this, is misdirection.
Mm-hmm.
If you can get all the sheeple to point their heads to the right, while mm-hmm. you do the old bait and switch on the left, mm-hmm. what better thing than an emotional story such as this? Now, the black box transmits and has a battery for 21 days. It's mm-hmm. publicly known 19. The jets on that plane each have radio transmitters that send and relay data back to Boeing,
mm-hmm.
independent of the black box.
Right. There's six satellites, transponders.
Six transponders. Satellites can tell you how many sheets of paper I used to blow my nose at 2:30 this afternoon sitting in Nashua, New Hampshire, and you're telling me they can't find this effing plane. Really?
Well, that's true, but I will tell you that where they think the plane is and where they're searching right now, yeah, that's not a, it's, you know, they don't consider that a big area that, of interest. You know, you're talking about the South Indian Ocean near Antarctica. It's,
yeah.
Yeah.
We all know that plane is in the belly of the mothership currently orbiting Mars right
That's
now.
That's right. And we will be, we'll be visited soon. The visitors will come. So, anyway, okay. So, my only other thing was, did you know that South by Southwest happened last week and this week, I guess? Or was it the last 2 weeks?
Yeah, because we heard about some guy that drove his car into the front of a
That's
restaurant.
Right. So it has been 2 weeks now. But remember when South by Southwest was like the hottest thing on all the podcasts and you'd hear about it on the news and everything? And, yeah, I haven't heard too much about it. And, you know, you listen to... all the podcasters that usually talk about it, they said, did you go, are you going this year? No. Are you going this year? No. Are you going? Nobody went.
Well, all the marketers went is the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, plus it used to be that most of the bands that were bands that were trying to make it. And then they got invaded by bands that had already made it. And those bands became the news. And then everybody figured, well, so what? Those guys are already there, so who cares? You know?
So, there has
so
been
it stopped bands. Being, yeah, it stopped being about who's coming up and who's trying to make it and became the same old sad story about who's already around and what crap have they done now. You know, and like, who cares?
And that's and only half
that
of it.
Every day.
That's, you know, it kind of got divided up into two things with, you know, social... media and everything. The first half was kind of like tech and social media, and then the second week was all about the bands. And I haven't heard about either one of them this year, so it's interesting.
Well, it started out all about bands.
Yes,
it started out as a music festival,
right?
Yeah, it was.
You know, and when it got away from music, was when it started to lose its importance.
Hmm.
You know, when it started to turn into tech. I mean, we already have. Plenty of groupings and gatherings for tech.
Tech, yes.
We don't need one that's surrounded by music. And then the music got to be less important, and of course people paid less attention.
Yeah.
Especially when mainstream artists started to invade it and just took it over. It's like who cares who's there now?
Yeah, yeah. You really want to hear the up and coming bands, not the has-beens trying to make their comeback. Yeah, you know, so. All right, so that was South by Southwest. That was again another thing that was like, wow. Hey, I got to say, I'm not unhappy that we didn't hear so much about it. Yeah, I'm sure it's fun.
Yeah, it's
kind
of a non-event.
Yeah, I'm sure it's fun to go to, but I mean, I remember the past couple of years, it was just that's all you heard about was South by Southwest, South by Southwest, and it's like, okay, nice. So, one note, because you always hear Sammy, my Alaskan Malamute, at the end of the H show, you hear Sammy, and but he turned 10 on St. Patrick's Day. He's the only Irish Alaskan Malamute, in existence. And
did you dye him green?
No. It's Emily's birthday, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Really?
Our yellow lab's
birthday. Happy birthday, Emily.
Yeah.
Happy birthday.
Wow. How old's Emily now?
She's 13.
Wow. So she's got Sammy beat by a couple of years. Wow. Yeah, Sammy McGee Furnival. That's what we... So, yeah, just wanted to mention that because you hear him every week at the end of the show. So, saw an interesting article about the rise of machine reporters, and I heard about this before, but the earthquake that happened in Los Angeles, the first report that went out from the Los Angeles Times was generated by a computer program, and it wasn't edited by any human being. So now we're starting to get our news automatically generated by computers. Interesting. As if the reporters don't have enough problems.
Yeah, really.
Well, maybe they can. The computers can be more fair and balanced.
Yeah, really. I don't have a problem with that. You know, especially like we're reporting that an earthquake is occurring and things. I mean, they're probably much more up to date and certainly immediate and more right on the spot. You don't have to worry about them being emotional about it and worrying about property damage or people's lives lost. They're just simply reporting the facts. And really, isn't that all we really want? Is like have people just shut the hell up and just give us the facts and let us make our own judgments about things?
That's true. That is true. So I guess we'll get to see more of that coming up soon. So I don't know whether it'll be pointed out to us or not, though, like this one was. But I wonder if another computer wrote about the computer that was writing about the Earth.
You know, I bet you that clever programmers working for one side or either the left or the right could probably find ways to make computers slant the news automatically.
Yeah, I'm sure they can.
Yeah, I'm sure that's easy. So
I mean, you know, with the abilities of IBM's Watson, I'm sure that they could slant it any of six different ways. Hmm. You know, just as a matter of course, in seconds.
Yeah. Yep, that's true. So, yep, we'll be seeing more and more of that, and less and less reporters probably doing, you know, they'll be sticking to other things. And
well, we don't really get a whole lot of reporting anyway.
No, we don't.
I mean, if you go through the news, all the reports you get are all from the same one source, repeated by everybody. Because yes. You know how when we were younger, it was like every single news agency sent out their own reporters to gather the news for them,
yeah.
You know? And now it's just like everybody relies on the same one feed, and they all just take it in and report it the way they want to.
Yep.
You know, because you can see things reported verbatim across mm-hmm. like six different sources.
Well, it's Conan O'Brien does that. Conan O'Brien does that. Have you ever seen his little sketch? Sometimes he gets together, he gets all the local stations, and there's these prepackaged stories that go out, and he sits there and his team puts all together. They're saying the exact same words. They're telling a story. You know, usually they're lighthearted stories or something like. Punxsutawney Phil saw his shadow today, and you know, and then he cut in the next station, local station. And they say the exact same words, and you know, he just plays them boom, 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 one after the other, and it's just so funny. It's like, oh my god, we're all getting the same homogenized news, you know, from one source. So, yeah, it's interesting to try to find real news these days. So. I have to take this opportunity right now because it's that time of year, and I got my fixed rate mortgage. The new payment amount came in, and I say fixed rate because it's not supposed to change, right? Except for you know,
that's usually the word fixed usually means.
Yes, but I have the escrow account thing where they pay my taxes and they pay my insurance. Well, yes, I found out today that my insurance or my mortgage payment went up $157 this year because Jaffrey's property taxes went up $1,000 this year. And or my property taxes for Jaffrey went up $1,000 this year. And I have to say a special thank you to the EPA and their unfunded mandates and the New Hampshire state government, because several years ago the EPA came in and looked at our perfectly good water treatment plant and said, oh, we have new rules and regulations, and your water treatment plant doesn't meet those, so you have to upgrade it. And if you don't upgrade it, we're going to start fining you $250 a day until you do. Of course, there was no federal funding coming with this, where they changed the rules on people. And so, but the state said, oh, don't worry, we'll help you out. So we raised bonds and our property taxes went up for the new multi-million-dollar water treatment plant. I've talked about this before on here. And, well, last year, it came time for the state to pony up their $6 million, I think they were going to give us as part of the payment. And they said, we're not going to do that. I'm sorry, so sorry, but we just, you know, we just had to upgrade this water treatment plant at multi-million dollars, and you were supposed to help us out, and now it's all on Jaffrey to pay for this water treatment plant from an unfunded EPA mandate, where they were going to charge us money, fine us money if we didn't do it. And so it's, yeah, it's getting awful expensive to live in Jaffrey right now. And, I'm off my soapbox. And yeah. Of course, people say, oh, it's just pennies on the dollar. And, of course, the town of Jaffrey, their regular budget, they just keep going ahead like they don't have this debt on their heads. You know, and they keep trying to raise everything else up, and it's like, excuse me, we can't do this new stuff until we get this frickin' water treatment plant paid off. Right. You know, if you were a regular family, you wouldn't do this. But you're not. You just can't, oh, it's just pennies on the dollar. Yeah, your pennies on the dollar, the state's pennies on the dollars, the federal government's pennies on the dollars. I got no pennies left on my dollar.
You have no dollars left.
Yeah, that's true, too. So, okay, just my bitch out because I love my mortgage payment that's, you know, fixed rate, and it goes up every year because of frickin'.
Yeah, well, the... Your mortgage interest rate isn't changing. That is still a fixed rate. It is. All the charges around it are going up.
Right. But each month I look at it, and I know you can divide it up like that, but each month I look, I got to pay this amount for my mortgage payment. And, you know, that's what it costs me to live in Jaffrey.
Yeah, we get the same things over here. And when I was living in Nashua, I had the same kind of thing. I'm paying half the taxes I'm paying here than I was in Nashua, and I had a 900 something square foot house there with a postage stamp piece of ground to put it on. And here I'm living in a 2,000 square foot house with 4.5 acres of land, and I'm paying half the taxes I were. Property taxes and including school taxes, and I was in Nashua.
But you got income tax there also, too, right?
Yeah, and sales tax. Yeah,
yeah. So
but all
yeah.
that. But
and
I also
you're not allowed to have a large Coke.
What's that?
What?
You're not allowed to have a large Coke.
Oh no, that was only in New York City. That was not all of New York. That guy was a mayor of one city that was a major city in the world, but was a very small part of actual New York State.
Yeah, no, I was making a joke.
I can't wait to get back to New Hampshire just because this is such a fucking, I mean, excuse me, a stinking fascist state. You can cut that out, right, Barry? But,
friggin',
I came.
Why would I want to? Why would I want to? I totally agree with it.
So, but, yeah, a life in New Hampshire with no sales tax and no income tax is something that sounds really nice until you got to pay your property tax. And then if you own land, you're screwed. So you're better off moving to New Hampshire and renting someplace and not paying any tax at all. So that's,
yeah, I guess your rent does reflect the other person's property taxes, though.
Yes, it does. Trust me.
So,
well, yeah, but I think the cost of owning a home in New Hampshire compared to renting something, it tends to be cheaper to rent in most places, especially in the southern part of the state where all the mass holes moved in. Hmm. You guys are screwed down there.
Well, I'll tell you, I've seen some rent, talking to kids, I mean, and young kids at work, and what they're paying for rent, and I'm like, damn, dude, that's my mortgage payment. And I got a high mortgage payment because I got a 15-year loan, you know? So I did that because I didn't want to be paying a frickin' mortgage till I was 80, you know?
It's not uncommon to pay $2,000 a month in rent.
I was staying in Bedford and paying around the grand.
Yeah, how many years ago was that?
Actually, that was about 5 years ago.
Yeah,
I had a job out here. What drew me to New York was I took a job working for supporting a number of National Guard sites for their command and control systems, and the main one was here in Syracuse, and so we moved out here, and when that contract ran out, we still had the house up here. But I moved back. That was in 2005. I moved back to Bedford, and I was paying around $1,000 a month at a pretty nice apartment complex and commuting down to Hanscom. Hmm. Commute from hell. Commute from hell.
Yeah, I know. I was going to say that. Well, Joel does that almost every day, that same commute.
Yeah. Yeah, and now you see why Joel is the way he is.
That's just because I'm a charming individual.
So, you know, but it cost me less to live in that apartment in 2005 than it did for me to live in my house in Nashua, and I had about the same amount of square footage in that apartment. I just didn't have a basement, which doesn't get included in the square footage.
Yeah. Well, I think it also depends on the town you live in and stuff like that, too, because, like I said, Jaffrey's just ridiculous right now, and it's going to be ridiculous until they pay those bonds off.
Yeah. Well, plus, every time you want to renew your plates on your car, you got to spend, like, $300 a year. I mean, my God.
Yeah.
That excise tax will kill you.
Wait, where? I mean, in New Hampshire?
For me, it's like, yeah.
Well, that's why.
Yeah, I pay $50. I pay $50 for 2 years to register my vehicles.
Yeah.
And they're fairly new.
Yeah, that's another way they get you. When I lived in Virginia, we had personal property tax on the cars, and it was the same thing as what they do up here. You know, it's always the blue book value. You're charged a rate on the blue book value of your car, so it pays to have used cars up here. New cars is what kills
you. Exactly. So you need to rent an apartment in a low cost area and drive an old car, and you'll make out just fine in New Hampshire.
Yeah. I guess. Yeah.
Hey, well, that's where I grew up. It's my home state, and I can't wait to get back someday. But, you know, the reality of the situation is what it is. I mean, no matter how good the tax situation sounds, there are always things that kind of make it not much different than every place else.
Right.
But New York and Massachusetts do tend to be worse than everybody else.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, they get taxed.
So there's my soapbox.
Yeah.
Josh, you're up.
I got nothing to complain about. So this week I'm fresh out.
Not even anything for that bottom subject?
Well, I'm going to have to. They're going to make me force me to look again.
Look, stop talking about Josh's ass. I mean, come on.
Yeah, exactly. That bottom subject, believe it or not, I've got absolutely nothing.
Really?
Not a thing to say.
Just happy?
It's
running?
Trucking right along. Nothing.
Wilson!
Yeah, Wilson! But, the only thing I'm thinking about, barring what you guys started off with as far as weather, for basically Wilson, is I was getting ready to take the studded snows off of it until you guys chimed in and said, we're getting a nor'easter on Tuesday. Maybe I'll leave them on.
Yeah, I would leave them on another week or so.
Yeah. Yeah, wait till Thursday.
Yeah.
Well, New Hampshire, you don't have to take them off. We talked about that before. Yeah. They're legal year-round in New Hampshire, but because I work so in the, you know, in the wonderful suburbs of Boston, and in the state of Massachusetts, you can't have any studded tires on your car past April. So April 1, you better be running regular street tires.
Even if there is another major snowstorm on.
Exactly. So that being, April 1st, nor'easter. Thank you. Well, that'll be a day I'm staying home from work.
Yep. So, well, we're down. What's that?
I said that'll be a snow day.
Yeah, snow day. We've had enough of those this year. Michael, we're into your topics now. I see you added quite a bit.
Well, I was trying to get you to play the bumper, but I guess it's too late now.
Oh, if you want to, I can play it anyway, because everybody likes the bottom gear.
Mostly everybody just likes Michael's dance.
Okay, so
hello.
All right,
you really got to do the Hello, and welcome to another edition of Bottom Gear. I'm one of your hosts, Joel, and today Michael has a little story for us.
Michael, do you have a story for us?
That was your cue, Michael.
Strategic pause.
You've been parked for a week. I don't know if it's going to start.
Oh, jeez.
That starts it from bottom gear to no gear.
Exactly.
Well, we tried.
So the Jeep's been parked for a week, and it's not been run. So I actually long for, on my drives to work, I truly do. I listen. When I hit the podcast that shall not be named, and I hit that start button on Downcaster, I listen. The first thing I listen for is the music, and then I listen for going down the street. And, I've missed that.
Well, you'll hear it from time to time. I like the sound of the family truckster a little bit better. It's a little easier to talk over.
Yeah.
But, I had my guest host of Fenny Ho Crick two episodes ago. I thought that was a good background, and
yes.
And then you had the noise of the city on the last one.
That was cool.
Which I had fun. Well, and I wish I'd been on the show that you guys talked about drive-thrus, but I was like, I can turn this into a complete mini episode, so I had to do that.
Well, you did, and you played that song. That was great. So
yeah,
the drive-thru song.
Yeah,
that was.
And if anybody wants to know what that song's about, they have to go. Subscribe to
episode 80 of the podcast that shall not be named.
Yes.
So speaking about podcasts, listening finally, I was so busy this week I really didn't have a lot of chance to listen to podcasts, but I did listen to the latest episode of Best Episode Ever today, and lo and behold, Tom Merritt's the guest host.
Yes, really?
Yes.
I haven't heard it yet. I'm several behind, so I'm catching up. I was catching up this week.
Now, I wasn't aware that he was a past host. I guess it goes back to like season 2. So I've still got a lot of catching up to do on Best Episode Ever. But he was there. It was good to hear him. Hmm. I think it was less than 5 minutes into the show when they mentioned, you're sounding a little twitless to us.
Wow.
No, it was great to hear him on.
That's neat. Well, yeah, I know he used to go to the... Podcasts Without Borders or Podcasters Without Borders?
Podcasters Across Borders. Pat.
Across Borders. Without Borders. Okay. Across Borders.
I like that. Podcasters Without Borders.
There we go.
There's the new conference, the Follow Pab. Anthony, are you listening?
PWB.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, there we go. See? I accidentally coined a new phrase.
So what happened to Tom Merritt at Twit?
He got fired.
What caused him to leave?
Because he was doing it, you know, his wife got a job with Google, working down in their video studio down there. And so he left over a year ago now. They moved down to Los Angeles. And so he was doing the news thing, Tech News Today, remotely from Los Angeles. And I don't know what happened, but I don't know whether it was Leo who decided this or whether Leo's girlfriend, who's the CEO of Twit, decided, but they decided it was not comfortable to have the person in charge of the news group to be remotely we lost Michael. To be remotely living remotely and trying to do everything remotely, even though that's what all this whole tech thing is about and podcasting and everything. It was just too much, and Leo wanted to expand the news a little bit better, and then a good buddy of Leo's became available, so they pretty much did not renew Tom's contract.
And with very little notice. Oh.
Yes, with very little notice.
That's kind of sad.
Yeah, and but you know, if you listen to him talk on air, Tom thanked Leo and everything for, you know, all their stuff, and you know, they were very gracious and stuff, and Leo offered to keep his other shows on the air, but Tom pulled them and restarted them. He's with the Frog Pants Network right now, I think.
Yep.
Pretty much all his stuff's on the Frog Pants Network. And all I can say is Leo's lost in Frog Pants gain, really.
Big time.
Because I don't know what the numbers are for TNT now that, what's the guy that, I don't even know the guy's name. He's on Tom Eglin or something like that. All I know is I said, well, I'll give this guy a chance. They gave him exactly one show. I said, oh my God, this is horrible. This is nothing like Tech News Today. And then I found out that Tom started his the Daily News Show, or was it? Yeah, Daily Tech News Show.
Daily Tech Show.
And
I think you're right. Daily Tech News Show.
Yeah, and I jumped right over to that and said goodbye to TNT. And Tom's doing it just like he's always done it, and that's the way I like it, you know, with the guests. And you get your fill of all the tech news, and it's short and sweet, and really nice. So I give, you know, and he's running it with the Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak method of trying to fund it. He's doing the value for value thing. He does not have any advertising on his show. It's people donating and pledging value for value, so it'll be interesting to see if that works out for him. There, so far it has. It's been very good to them, and they're quite happy with it. But he's got his other one. So what was the other one he used to have on?
Cord Cutters is one of them.
Well, yeah, but it was called something else. What was it called on Twit? I can't think of the name of it now already, because I used to subscribe to it there, and I can't think of what the frickin' thing was called. But he changed the name to Cord Cutters. Yeah.
Yeah,
he had to change all the names.
You go to TomMerritt.com and you can see everything he's doing.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm a big Tom Merritt fan. Definitely.
Likewise.
So, he's just got a good, smooth personality. He's fair and balanced on his shows. And, yeah, he's very good. Very good. So, I can't wait to listen to the best episode ever. To hear Tom. That's neat. Okay, kiteboarders. I saw a TV news, a local news thing about kiteboarders, which is the latest and greatest craze where they've got snowboards and they get those kites like the kite surfers have.
Yep.
And instead of, you know, being out on the water, well, I guess they're kind of still out on the water up your way.
It's just frozen.
But
the landings are a lot rougher.
Yeah, I could imagine that. So what are they doing up there?
Well, it's been pretty popular up here for a couple of years now, but with Lake Superior frozen the way it is. Now, Lake Superior is, I mean, it's like looking at a mountainscape because you've had ice crushing into ice and it's not smooth, but the harbor is pretty smooth. And, you know, there's been some local kiteboarders here in the harbor that have been pretty active. There are also some of the mountain biking crew. That's no, you know, big surprise, keeping active year round. Lake Medora near us is a common place where they go, but this weekend, as I came home, as I said, I've been on the road for the last week, actually been on the road most of this month, but all of the fishing shanties were out there, except instead of fishing, there are all kinds of kiteboarding supplies around and all kinds of people flying through the air out in the harbor in the wind. So I'm having a grand old time, and I asked my wife about it, and she goes, oh, yeah, they've been out here a couple of days just hanging out and kiteboarding, then they're going back to the ice shacks to warm up. And probably, you know, drink some antifreeze of the drinkable kind, of the consumable kind, of course,
yeah.
And then going back out and doing more kiteboarding.
Wow.
So I probably, after the show tonight, I may go to town and see if any of them are
doing nighttime?
Imbibing for muscle relaxant reasons, of course.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, have you had any calls for the kiteboarders?
Well, I've been gone all week.
Oh, that's right. So you haven't been on call.
It's possible. They tend to be a pretty hardy group. They'll break collarbones and stuff and go, it's only a flesh wound.
Get back out there.
Yes.
Jeez. Yeah, with Mike being gone for a week, it wouldn't do them any good to call him.
No.
Actually, the service did call me while I was out of state. And they're like, well, can't quite make it back in time for shift tonight. I wasn't scheduled. No, we're just checking to see if you wanted the shift. I said, well, it's about an 8-hour drive. I don't think I'll make it. Oh, okay. That happened twice this week.
Jeez. Wow. Okay. How are the copper bots doing?
All right. Well, this is the second week of competition for the Calumet High School copper bots. And considering they've been going for a few years, but this current crew is all new.
Mm-hmm.
Last week, they, along with their alliance, for anybody who follows First Robotics Competition, they placed first with their alliance last week. This was a bigger district event down in Traverse City, which is across the bridge there, hey? Across the Mackinac Bridge.
Oh, okay.
So they're now down in the main part of Michigan, and 5 out of the 8 teams... Oh, wait a minute. How does that work in the finals, semifinals? 5 out of the 8 teams were from the UUP.
Really?
Wow, that's awesome.
Wow, that's
awesome. And
says a lot about the rest of Michigan. Oh, no.
Well, I was kind of thinking of it the other way, Barry. I mean, just how awesome the UP folks are.
Well, yeah.
Because they're out in the woods, you know.
Well, we've got Michigan Tech up here. It's a very it's a very good engineering college.
Yeah, that's kind of an equivalent to
Michigan
MIT.
Tech sent 6 of their engineering students.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. At one time, actually, it was right up there in the top 5 with MIT.
Yeah.
Back when I was looking for colleges, it was. But they sent 6 of their engineering students to be mentors to both Houghton High School and Calumet High School. And Houghton High School this weekend went undefeated except for one team, and that was Calumet High School beat them. And when it came time, after you go through all, you basically, there were 43 teams, I think, in this competition. Yeah. And they all basically pair up with everybody, you know, in each match. And then at the end of it, they're all ranked by how well each one of the teams did. And then the top 8 teams get to pick an alliance. They send out invitations to other teams, and the other teams can accept or decline these alliances. But the Houghton team picked the Calumet High School team. And when it came right down to it, they sailed through the and Calumet High School was picked, and the very last pick, we were all holding our breaths, but they were picked. Sailed through the quarterfinals, sailed through the semifinals, got to the finals, and we realized it was pretty evenly matched. Our team won the first one, the other team won the second one by a foul. And the third one, the other team won, but it was a great competition. So, David's team came in second this weekend, but you know, a first and a second in 2 weeks competition is pretty damn good.
Yeah,
all of these teams are fantastic.
Wow,
this is just the meeting of the geeks. And I know you've talked about him before, but Dean Kamen sure started something great across this country because just getting kids interested in science again.
Yeah, it is a fantastic.
That's my call out there.
Oh hell, and it's getting
it's getting bigger. I mean, now they've gone. You know, they've got the high school league, they've got the middle school league. Now they've got the Lego League and the Junior Lego League.
Wow.
Competitions.
Oh, okay. So they're doing Legos.
Great.
That's of course, it's also getting a bunch of engineers interested and involved with the kids too, because I know our company is really big into it, and they were one of the founding members along with Dean Kamen, and they wholly support it and say, hey, you got to go out during the day to go do stuff. They give you excuse time to go out and do it, and they're really into this and supporting it. So
yeah, and I don't know how it happened, but your company is actually one of the major sponsors of our team this year.
I could see that.
Without calling their name out, but I really appreciate that. And the team really appreciates that, because we weren't sure how we were going to be able to get through the funding this year. And then this funding came through and was like, fantastic. So, way cool.
Well, yeah. It's they've been at it from the very beginning. And I'm not sure where it started, but I know one of the first places it started, of course, naturally, was in New Hampshire, because that's where Dean Kamen is, and that's where a big chunk of our company is. When I say big chunk, not that big a chunk. It's an international company, so.
Yeah.
It's all over.
Yeah, there are big chunks in the D.C. area and out in San Diego.
Yeah, down in Austin, Texas, and I think.
Yeah.
Well, there are places.
The first letter of your company's name does not stand for America.
No, it doesn't.
So they're definitely international.
Yes. So anyway, that's cool. That is really neat. So you said the whole family is now on iMessage? Oh, everybody's got an iPhone?
Last Sunday. As of Sunday, yeah. What? And we spent another fun-filled 2.5 hours at the Verizon store on Sunday. But I was getting ready to go on the road again. I had, my iPhone 4 was fully repaired and all ready to go. So our youngest son wanted to go snowboarding, so we dropped him off at the hill. And my wife and I then continued on to the Verizon store, where we had an incredibly helpful lady weed through the conversion of getting us from Altel up to Verizon. And basically, she went through all the numbers. And problem with Altel, they still were obligated to keep us in the Altel plan if we wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And I could have added my wife and my son to the Altel plan, and it still would have been almost $30 a month less than the current Verizon shared plan. But the 6 gig of data would be divided up, not as a, it wouldn't be shared, it would be 2 gig per user.
Oh, okay.
And if I wanted a personal hotspot, it would still cost me $30 a month extra for that.
Ah.
So we talked back and forth a little bit more on that. Finally decided to go with the family sharing plan, so we could get the big pool of data and share it between us. And that unlocked my personal hotspot for free. So now I can play Ingress.
Yeah, isn't it great? That's what I'm doing.
It is.
I'm playing through the hotspot.
I feel I paid my dues, Yep. But I did it all. Well, I shouldn't say that. I originally did it on the iPhone, but after they got all pissy about it and reset me, I had to start all over again with the Nexus 7, which is a good experience, other than the fact that I had to do it.
You got level
Wi-Fi into it.
You got level 6, and you got level 6 by using Wi-Fi only.
It took me a while.
Yeah, I know, but man, I've been at it.
Stretch from 5 to 6. You can imagine. That's 150,000 points you got to get.
I know. I saw that. And I went from 3 to 5 in about 3 weeks. So I guess that's pretty good. But,
yes, it is. But, every level doubles.
Yes,
points
I know.
That you need. Every level doubles.
But supposedly you get more points when you go attack and everything, because you got much cooler weapons. And
Yeah, well, and you can actually take down enemy portals. That's where you really get the points.
Right, right. And that's the thing. Yeah. They actually, these guys I was talking to, they said level 5 is like the jumping point. When you get to level 5, then you can start really doing some damage and stuff like that. Otherwise, you're just kind of like a little mouse running around following big guys. You know, right. It's like they take a jab. I'm going to get a bit piece. Jeez. So.
Not using a pea shooter anymore.
Right, right. So, but yes, the hotspot. Actually, that'll lead us into the next topic here.
Yes.
Start off with something that's broken. And I don't know whether it was broken in it's broken 7.1. And you may not have this problem. But, of course, since I've activated my hotspot, my Nexus 7, or pretty much anything, will not automatically connect to my hotspot, even though I've got it on all the time. And I finally found that the workaround for it is I've actually got to go into settings and select the hotspot. Like, you know, I'm going to change the settings on the hotspot. All I have to do is bring that display up and bam, everything connects instantly. But if I don't have that up, it won't connect.
I only have that problem with my Nexus 7.
What? With you're using your Nexus 7 as a hotspot?
No. Having a Nexus 7 connect to my iPad Air automatically.
Hmm.
Everything else, you know, my iPhone and other things that know about it will connect automatically without issue. The Nexus 7. On my iPad, I have to actually go to the hotspot, turn it off and back on, and the Nexus 7 connects automatically at that point.
I don't have to turn it on or off. What I found is as long as I'm displaying the settings for the hotspot setup, things will connect to it. If I don't have that, it doesn't connect, and they'll all sit there be trying, and I'll go over and I'll hit that, and I'll just display the hotspot settings, and all of a sudden, boom, I get the blue batter on the top, and everything starts connecting. So,
Well, with me, it's only the Nexus 7 I have troubles with. Everything else just connects automatically like it should.
Hmm.
But the Nexus 7, I have to actually go to the iPad and turn the hotspot off and back on, and then the Nexus 7 discovers it.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I've got a theory on this. Here, out in the cabin in the woods,
mm-hmm.
I have no issues at all. Just bam, 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 it connects. The more crowded the Wi-Fi space is, the harder it is to get them to connect. And what if the place I was staying at in the city, if I did not have the device that was connecting to my iPhone hotspot in the same room, you know, within feet,
uh-huh.
it wouldn't connect. Once it's connected, it stays connected. But uh-huh. what I'm suspecting, and I won't be able to check it until I look at it with a Wi-Fi sniffer, but I'm wondering what the SSID broadcast interval is. If they've got it really spaced out, and you're in a crowded environment, there's no contention for RF space there, and they might be competing. You know, they might be overriding each other.
It could be, but I will tell you, in my case, I've kind of played with that. I've actually had the Wi-Fi connection up on the Nexus 7, in particular this one. Now, these things are actually sitting literally inches away from each other in the car.
Right.
And it'll, you know, I've got a list of Wi-Fi devices on there, and it says it's not, what is it? Not airy, not near, not whatever it says. It basically says it's, you know, it's not close enough, right? But
yeah, not within local areas.
Yeah, where whatever. Like yeah, but as soon as I, and that's just what made me figure that what I had to do. As soon as I went into the iPhone, now it's an iPhone 5, of course, and I go into settings and I hit the hotspot and I display it. All of a sudden, boom, it changes, and it's on my Nexus 7, and it says, oh, it's available. And if there's a lot of other Wi-Fis there, then I have to actually choose it on the Nexus 7 to connect to it, because it's going to probably go with the most powerful Wi-Fi signal. But it won't even recognize it until I put it on the settings screen. So I don't know. I should probably write Apple about that and see if anybody else is experiencing that same thing. Of course, you're running a 5S now, and I've got a 5, and I'm not sure. Oh, Barty's using an iPad, so
I saw the same problem with an iPad mini running 7.1. So it's finicky getting the initial connection, but once it connects, and I've had the same problem with either my MacBook or an Nexus or whatever. But once it gets going, then it's fine.
Matter of fact, when I get home at night and everything's in the house, I got to remember to go to the Nexus 7 and say, "Oh crap, it's still," because they're sitting right next to each other on the on the thing. I said, "Oh crap, let me go turn that off." I guess it doesn't matter because at that point though, my iPhone's doing Wi-Fi, so it's Wi-Fi to Wi-Fi.
But except that if you notice that you can't turn, if your iPhone's on Wi-Fi and the cell's off, you can't turn the personal hotspot on. But the one thing you got to watch on the Nexus 7, and I don't know if you've checked this or not, but all those apps in Android will keep updating.
Oh yeah, I know.
So I went through. So they're going to be using your hotspot data, even though you think you're only using it for ingress. So I had to go back into Android and reset all the settings. There's one reset button that resets all the apps default. Doesn't erase their data, but it resets the apps to default, so they don't automatically update. Because you don't want them doing that while you've got.
Yeah, I never even thought about that. Good point. Thank you. Yes, because I.
You know, Michael, a lot of the things that you're saying really makes a lot of sense with my situation, because the times that I'm having trouble getting the Nexus 7 to sync to my iPad Air is at work, and I work in a my office is located in a business park where there are a number of corporations around, so there's like a ton of Wi-Fi connections that are all protected and things. So it does seem to get confused there, but. Once I turn my iPad Air hotspot off and on and it connects, it stays connected. I can go all the way home and get into the house, and I've noticed that if I don't go and turn my hotspot off, that the Nexus 7 will drain my iPad's battery using it to do all of its internet stuff rather than switching automatically to my local Wi-Fi network in the house.
Right, that's what I've seen too. I usually just go in the Nexus 7 and connect it up to my Wi-Fi.
So when the iPad detects that it has a client on hotspot, it will not switch to the local.
Oh, really?
The local. It will not. It will not kick the client off. So you have to go through, like when I switch my iPad to my Wi-Fi network, it says, "Hey, you have somebody connected." You know, and I have to say, yeah, okay, join this anyway. And it bumps him off. And then the Nexus 7 connects to my local home Wi-Fi network.
Okay.
But the Nexus 7 will not connect to the home network automatically when I get home. And the iPad will not abandon him for it. So, you know, I've got a company-provided Verizon network extender that goes through my home network to give me cell coverage here.
Yeah.
We have no cell service.
Yep.
And the iPad will connect to that and give the Nexus 7 connection through that until I turn all that crap off and switch everything back to my home Wi-Fi network.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, well, what else does 7.1 fix, Michael, that you... Because last week we reviewed all the new things.
Okay, which I haven't had a chance to listen to that yet, because remember I came in at the end of the show.
Well, we said all the new things.
Well, one thing that's really fixed, and I think we've got a delay in here now, sorry. Okay. But very annoying for me, because again, like Barty, I don't have cell phone coverage out here. But now that my wife originally did not get on the iPhone she wanted iMessage, she wanted to be able to talk to the kids, but... It took her about, I think, 2 days to realize, hey, this is cool. I mean, she was still happy with her flip phone up until last weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing about iMessage and being on Wi-Fi is that it was great about receiving messages. But if you were on airplane mode with the Wi-Fi on, because we've got no cell coverage out here, you want to save your battery, as soon as you tried to reply to somebody, you'd always get this annoying pop-up window going, your cell's off. Turn your cell back on to reply. And you're like, but I, and if you ignored it, it took me about a year to realize if you ignored it, it still sent the message by Wi-Fi anyhow.
Okay.
But you got this real annoying message. It has gone away finally. So now it's smart enough to realize that if you're on Wi-Fi and you got an iMessage, you probably want to reply by Wi-Fi.
That reminds me, I got to check.
You talked about that last week.
No, we didn't. No, we were just talking about the new enhancements. At 7.1.
Yeah, we're not as smart as you are, Michael.
But I got to check my wife's iPhone because all of a sudden, since actually 7.0, really not 7.1, but since 7.0, when I send her a message, they're all going out as SMS messages. We're not using iMessage, and I don't know why. I got to check on that. Although it doesn't matter now that I have unlimited SMS, but iMessage is it's nice.
Oh, well, that was the other thing. So we activated my wife's phone, and I went to go get a phone from my oldest son before he went away on the first robotics competition, because he normally would take my wife's phone with him. Mm-hmm. I said, okay, well, you know, let's see here, the 8 gig 4S is just not going to be enough room for his music, so we'll just kind of bypass that. We'll just get a 16 gig 5C. But we don't have any. We can order it. I said, well, now I need a phone now. Is there anything you can do for me? So they went back in the back room, and they said, okay, here's what we can do. We've got a 4S 16 gig that we'll give you for free, plus we'll give you a $50 in-store credit for accessories. So the free phone he got a 4S, but there's nothing wrong with the 4S. It's a nice phone.
Yeah.
And he got a 16 gig 4S, plus we got two OtterBox cases that, you know, the entire transaction, activating my wife's phone, the 16 gig 4S, and two OtterBoxes cost me, I think, $20.
Wow.
Going out the door. So that was pretty good.
Yeah.
A new contract.
Well, until you get the two $30 activation fees on your first bill. You know, that comes in your first phone bill.
I think I only get one activation fee.
I know. I thought it was $30 per phone.
Well, you get an activation fee for the phone, but I don't think there was an activation fee on the new line.
Okay. Well, it'll be interesting to see, because they're changing rules. Yeah. I just remember when they doubled it, you know, from 15 to $30, and I went, oh, you know.
Yeah, so, yeah.
But
yeah. Well, thanks to T-Mobile, things are getting a whole lot more competitive in the cell phone realm now.
Yeah.
Yep. I agree.
But and T-Mobile would definitely I would look into it if they actually had decent coverage out my way. My problem is you know, if I'm in town, that's fine. Out here, yeah, I won't have a cell phone.
Maybe the nearest spot for me would be like Chicago.
Yeah. Wow. So were you up? Go ahead.
I wouldn't be as bad as Michael is, but I would be in a similar boat. I would not have any coverage until probably like Syracuse or all the way into Rome. So it wouldn't really do me much good. Verizon, I get coverage when I get about 6 to 10 miles away from my house. I can hit Verizon in almost any I won't say any, but in most common directions. So it's not so bad. You can get AT&T in that same range as well.
Yeah.
But T-Mobile, I think we have to go a whole lot further, which would be rather dangerous, with the kind of traveling I do in the wintertime.
Right.
Which isn't nowhere near extensive as Michael's.
Well, yeah, Michael does everything extreme.
We do have radio. We're also ham radio operators. So we've had radios in our cars all along.
Yeah, I always
have. Between the ham radio and I've got paramedic radio and a fire radio with me. If I can't get a hold of somebody because I'm stuck, the world has ended. You know, it's just about that simple.
There we go. So you speaking of weather again, you spent some time up on the roof again?
No, I'll be doing it tomorrow. I've got another 3 to 4 feet of snow on the roof. This is going to be the third time this winter I've had to shovel it.
And you're not afraid it's all ice? Or the bottom layer's ice?
Well, I know there's some ice because I see some ice dam damage on the ceiling.
Well, that's
The thing is you have to get down to the ice to get that exposed. So, you know, this time of year when you start getting some sunlight, it actually starts melting the ice, and you get some ice melt along the edge of the roof, so like little channels through the ice get formed so the water can leak away.
Right.
Because I'm in the same boat as Michael is. I was on the garage roof yesterday, and I'll probably be back on there tomorrow. And the main roof, I have some heavy snow built up that I got to get up onto. But that's not really as bad as the garage. For some reason, I guess the winds have changed direction, and it's been blowing snow off the main roof onto the garage, and the garage is just taking a big load. Yeah. But what we usually do is go up there and get the biggest of the snow off, and then throw ice melt. There's a certain ice melt you have to use for roofs, and we put that along the edges so that we could get some channels open for water to leave. It's usually like hockey puck sized discs that we put up there that are made so they won't damage the roof and right. things. But it melts the ice out so the water can escape from the roof.
Yeah. Let's see, I've heard of people taking just regular like salt and putting it in like an old sock or a nylon stocking or something and throwing them up there, do the same thing.
I don't know if that'll. I'm not sure how that would treat your roof. You know, we have one of those the typical asphaltic shingle type roofs. You know, and I'm not sure what salt would do to something like that. I mean, we buy. Hockey puck, it really is a disc that's just about the size and shape of a hockey puck that we go and put up there on regular intervals behind the ice, and then we put some further up, and it just melts down into the ice and go through the ice along the top of the roof, and it makes channels underneath it for water to escape.
That's neat. That's a interesting thing. Okay, well, we're running... You're coming up on, I want to say we're probably about an hour and a half with the pre-show recording.
Wow.
But I don't know whether you guys, nobody's probably watched but me, the new Tonight Show starring Jimmy Fallon, who stole our logo. The other night he had on Billy Joel. And they did something, it was really good, actually. Not only is Billy Joel obviously a talented musician, but Jimmy Fallon's quite a talented musician himself, but they had an iPad, I don't know what the app was, but they had an app, and they were sitting there, and they were playing background things and making loops. And they did the song In the Jungle, I think, whatever, what was it called? The Jungle, The Lion Sleeps Tonight.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, by the old Token song.
Yeah, well, they did that, and they just made the loops. You could see them just layering the loops, and then they did the song, and it was so fantastic. And all they had was an iPad and their two microphones, and they did this thing, and it was really cool. But I got to say, unlike, some people, I have discovered some iPad apps that can help you if you're not that... musically inclined, it will help you out. And I actually did this before they did it. Again, they're copying me, but I've never have played it, but I do have the late night QRM rap, and I thought I'd play it. It goes about 2 minutes or so here we go.
The late, I gotta go to the bathroom.
The late night QRM rap.
Stay up late, late night. 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 Stay up late, late night.
It's almost done. And there it is, folks, the late night QRM wrap. It's an app. By Smule. By Smule.
That's after that.
Smule. That's pretty interesting. And of course, it's a free app, but you can, and that was the free, I don't know whether you call that hip hop or it's probably more hip hop than rap song, but you can go and buy more. You can go out and purchase more songs. And then basically, boy, I'll tell you, my music talent, all I did was sit there, go late night QRM, and it would record that. And then it would do the rest. You know, I did Live Free or Die. And it would take that and turn it into what you hear. So it's a pretty interesting piece of software.
Special guest this evening is Barry Vanilli.
Alright, so and we do have better music coming up on the show. We actually have
you mean like real music?
Yeah, real music. Brian Mangum and his song Hurt. But before we do that, we'll wrap things up. As we always do, we like to give a shout out to all the military people, both CONUS and OCONUS. Thank you for what you do, and especially you guys that are OCONUS, that are out there on the front lines, keeping us safe and missing your families and missing your friends back home. We hope you get back to them real soon. And until then, we'll keep the home fires burning for you. So with that, from the southwest corner of New Hampshire, I am Barry.
And from the southeast corner of New Hampshire, I'm Joel.
And from central New York's Tug Hill Plateau, this is Barty.
And from somewhere around, I guess it's going to be 2 degrees tonight, I'm Michael, the virtual Uber in the man cave.
Woohoo! 2 degrees! Heat wave!
Oh, it's warm.
It's above zero!
Celebrate! Should go up and have a pizza party up on that hill you do in the summertime. Nah.
There you go.
Frozen pizza. okay. That's it. We'll see you next week for 134. But until then, here's Brian Mangum.
All about the wrong thing. I was looking at wedding rings. It came all about the wrong time. She was seeing some other guy. I flew right into the wrong place when the whole thing blew up in my face. Hey, now all I have been faced with is a problem of my own concern. About my sin, I knew the right thing to do. I am sure I heard it in Sunday school.
trusting his fate to more promising days. Hey, now all I have been faced with is a problem of my own concern. Take now all I wanna give you, but I will not give you all my hurt.
Samson, speak! Good boy.